This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Welcome, everybody. Opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we got the Professor John Clayton joining us, as he does every day at 4 o'clock. We'll do some phone calls today. We'll get the thoughts of the Seahawk fan out there and see what they feel about a couple players. We'll throw a couple players out there, and you're going to tell us whether we should Seahawks should keep them or dump them. Sounds kind of harsh, but...
Keep them or dump them?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, free agents, you know, are you going to, and some of it is not about, hey, this guy's not any good, or it's about, are you going to pay this guy that much money to keep him?
Or how much do you pay him? You get to be the GM.
Yeah, well, if you leave it up, well, I'd say give him $1 million. Call it a day.
So let's be reasonable.
Yeah, we're going to need you to be realistic and function in today's NFL, being that GM. But we'll get into that coming up later on in the program. Meanwhile, we've got teams playing in the Super Bowl next week. Two have the best tight ends in football. You could say both of these teams have, I don't know which one you think is better. Maybe Kittle seems to have more hype than Kelce right now.
Yes.
But Kelce seemed to be the guy for a hot minute, that he was the best tight end.
Right.
And it feels like, you know, has that position kind of gone in and out of vogue, in your opinion?
Yes.
Where Antonio Gates, and Tony Gonzalez were, you know, they were the models of what you wanted and what you were looking for. Then it seemed like they kind of went away from that, and now it seems like the tight end has become a very integral part of, obviously, the Super Bowl matchup, but just kind of throughout the league, you're seeing it be a little bit more prominent?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to me. I think it's kind of like this year I counted the number of teams that had fullbacks, and I think it was 18, because fullbacks have kind of, you know, it used to be everybody had a fullback. I mean, Max Strong. I mean, guys like that, definitely. And, you know, ours was John L. Williams, which he was a really fleet-footed, great hands, super soft hands. But, you know, it seemed like in the early 2000s when Brady was lighting it up and throwing for 500 yards and the tight end started to disappear a little bit. And I find tight end to be kind of an interesting conversation of looking at that position, because like when you watch those guys now, Tony Gonzalez was incredibly athletic,
right?
But you know, Gronk, I mean, I guess they're tweeners, right? If you have a linebacker cover him, you're thinking, okay, you're going to be able to outrun the linebacker and outmaneuver him. And then if you get a DB covering you, you've got your size to kind of wall him off. But it's just it's kind of interesting that you have, you know, these guys. And if you look in the postseason, you know, Kittle and Kelce are way up there as far as yards. And, you know, it's just become and then when you look at the top 10 of all-time receivers, you got Witten and Gonzalez that are in the top six as far as yardage goes. So it's always interesting to me, because it's not like you see these receivers get loose and they got these quick moves and everything, and the tight ends are just kind of more plodding. But
they look that way. You would know better than anybody. They're decidedly faster than they appear on TV.
Yes.
Because they all look like they're just kind of loping out there, and yet they're running past people, especially Gronk. Gronk looked like a plodding, big muscle head out there, yet he's blown by guys. But he never looked fast to me.
No, he didn't, but boy, sure effective, and it sure seems like we see a lot of open tight ends for the against the Seahawks. And when you look back on the season, what the Seahawks did with, I mean, Hollister started out, I think he got cut originally, and then he was on the practice squad.
They traded for him, brought him here, and then released him, and then brought him back.
You got him for a seventh rounder, so yeah, you look at what Kansas City has with Kelce, and then George Kittle there in San Francisco, and the Seahawks missing Will Disley for most of the year. And I was just looking, and you tend to forget, once a guy's gone after about 4 or 5 weeks, you just focus on what's going on and who you have on the roster. And yet Will Disley, he ended up with more receptions with 23 in six games than three of your receivers. David Moore was 17, Jerron Brown was 16, and Malik Turner with 15. And still Disley
out-distanced. Does that speak to his greatness or their ineffectiveness? What does that say?
Well, I think it speaks to the greatness because, as you mentioned, Jim, what he played, he's played in 10 games, has six touchdowns. And think about, I think he had two against Pittsburgh. The way he maneuvers his body, and I was just looking at him, you know, before he got hurt in Arizona in that game, he was absolutely owning Chandler Jones, who's a good player. He is just
in terms of blocking him, he was
great blocker. Great blocker. Yeah, and he only caught one pass, and that was the one where he blew his knee out on his rookie year. But remember, he started out that year with over 100 yards of receiving as a tight end. And I remember Metcalf in his first game, I think, broke that record, but that was as a wide receiver.
Right.
But Disley went, I think, for 102 in that game against Denver.
You want to relive some of his glory?
I would love to hear more Will Disley.
All right, am I not potted up?
All right.
They apparently
Bobby promised
muted
me.
I think somebody muted this computer here. I'll fix it in a moment. But
it was probably Stacy.
Stacy
goes to all the computers and screws everything up by like
I don't know
logging
why.
Out and things like that.
I don't know why that's necessary, but let's try it. Take two.
Here comes the blitz again. Russell's going to go down the middle, reaching up, making the catch in the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks. Will Disley reaches up over the linebacker in coverage who didn't have a chance against Uncle Will. 14-yard touchdown strike after that penalty. Way to go. Big Will and the Seahawks are a point away from tying this up.
So that was his first one. Here's the you said
you
two.
Know what, that defense, real quick, they were in double high safety on that.
No, double high safety.
Boy, I heard somebody else say that today.
Single high safety.
Oh, who was it? Somebody was saying that.
You know
that
what Danny would do if he was on this show?
He would be just laying on
that. He would
that.
Say it as much as he possibly
yeah.
could.
He would lean on that
yeah.
any moment he could. Here's touchdown number two that day.
Carson in the backfield. Russell, look out off the near side corner. Throw to the end zone. It's caught. Touchdown, Seahawks. Will Disley for the second time today. Scores for the Hawks from 12 yards out. The two tight ends owned this drive. Vanette and Disley. With Disley paying it off on the touchdown reception, you can't cover everybody, and Disley open right down the middle. The Seahawks take their first lead of the day.
Vanette had forgotten all about him. He ended up playing for the Steelers. So, yeah, Disley's a guy you forget about because he was gone so early. And as you said, Jim, you tend to just get locked into who's there, who's doing what, who's not doing what. You forget about, especially a guy you know is not coming back. You're not anticipating his return that season. You know he's done. So it unfortunately out of sight, out of mind. Not in a disrespectful way, but you're not anticipating the return.
No, you don't. I'm looking at these numbers that he had. It projected to around probably 800 receiving yards and somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 touchdowns if he'd played the entire season. And we know last year the patellar tendon coming back from that. I wasn't so sure how he's going to come back from that.
He came back quick,
and there's a history in the NFL of not really bouncing back from that type of surgery, and he did. And then having the Achilles this year, and we'll see how he bounces back from that. But he's still only going to be 24 when he comes back next year.
Those are two serious injuries, though, too. I mean,
they're huge. Yeah,
and you know, couldn't it be just like a meniscus tear or something? You know, something. We're going to clean it up. He's out 4 to 6.
Well, it kind of worries me a little bit because those were both kind of just weird, awkward steps that he took in both Arizona when he blew out his patella tendon, and then in Cleveland when he blew out his Achilles. So, you know, I saw him down on the field a few weeks after that, and I was like prepared to give him like, hey man, you can do it, hang in there.
Hang in there, the pep talk.
Yeah, I was gonna give him the pep talk, and he gave me the pep talk basically. He
really?
Was like, yeah, I've done it before, I'd do it again, I'm working hard. And so he's gonna be back in there. But you know, those two touchdowns, and I think what makes him so special, I think one was just, the second one was a floater sort of over his head that he ran and got. But the other one was, as I mentioned, the double high safeties. There was a linebacker running down the field with him, which you see in cover two, and they're tight end. That's like the biggest threat to a linebacker. And Russell threw it back shoulder, so he ran and he jumped in the air and turned his body around and caught it with his hands, which is what you want to do. And and then the blocking part of it, just incredible. But also, he just couldn't be a better guy. And I know one of his foundations is I think he does something for autism, but he also has some foundation where it's trying to encourage kids to play more sports in high school, be multi-sport athletes. And I know Pete and his wife Glenna are big proponents of that. And Disley, just a great guy, a guy you love having on the team, but, you know, great receiver. And that was really
His strength coming in. He was brought in as a blocker by everybody's estimation. They talked about his blocking ability. And
best blocking tight end in the draft.
Yeah, and that's
he was.
What you were looking for, right? You thought you were getting a version of what Zach Miller was supposed to be. He was going to be a blocker. He turned into a de facto blocker because the line was so bad. But he was a pass catcher. It's just kind of weird these guys come in, you expect one thing from them, they become something else and become very good at it. Zach was a great blocker.
Oh, man. And he was sort of the gold standard of what you needed at tight end. And after he left, I mean, you just didn't really have anybody to do that. But one of the things I remember hearing this, I ran into Will Dissly when he was like a sophomore at Washington. We were in the security line at the airport.
He was still a defensive lineman.
Yeah, he was a defensive tackle then. And it's like, hey, you know, and he asked me a question. I asked him, and we started talking about football, and he was going back home to Montana. And then the day that that he was drafted, I know we have that audio, which is pretty funny, where he gets the call from Schneider and got drafted in the fourth round.
Here you go.
Hello?
Hey, is this Uncle Will?
This is Uncle Will.
Uncle Will, hey, John Schneider calling, bud.
How are you doing?
You doing good, man?
I'm doing great.
Good. You're going to have to move all the way over to the east side, brother. We're going to take you right here, okay?
No.
All
right, man. I can't wait to be a Seahawk.
Yeah, dude. We're fired up. We'll take you at 120, bud. Here's Coach Caleb. We're going to turn in right now, bud. All right.
All right. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, congratulations, Will.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is something we've been looking forward to, and we've got a whole kind of set of expectations for you, and it's going to be really, really good deal. We're pleased to get you. It's cool that you can stay close in the area and all that, too. So congratulations, brother. Nice deal.
Yeah, Coach. Appreciate that. I'm ready to work, man.
I know you are. We'll just kind of come across the street and come get us, okay? Hey.
Yep.
You got big Will Dissly, boys.
Hey.
Yeah, everybody's ready to go.
Thanks, guys. Go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks. That's right.
He's one of the few athletes. Mike Leake was this way. And then who was the other pitcher that had the kids that he had look you in the eye?
Wade LeBlanc.
LeBlanc, where an athlete actually asked me a question.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's Dissly. Like, I was walking with him to an interview one time, and he was just peppering me with questions, just kind of like Bob.
Really?
Actually, yeah, kind of question boy.
It means he's really intelligent.
Yeah, well, he's curious, that's for sure, and that leads to intelligence. Yeah, and the other thing about him that I think – and I'm sure everybody else saw this too, but there's a clip of Schneider talking about his hands before they right after they drafted him. He said you could not hear the ball hit his hands. That's how good he
is. Soft hands.
Just soft hands. So
is he a guy you look at? And I know we love him here, and man, you hope he can come bounce back from another serious injury. But is he a guy you look at and say he could be on the same level as Kelsey? He could be on the same level as Kittle, or
yeah.
Some like to call him Kettle.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the numbers, and I'd say that there are some guys that are better. Kittle to me is the gold standard. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't seen much of Travis Kelce's blocking, but I know that Kettle is really a good blocker, really a good blocker. I watched him wear out Luke Kuechly on a sweep early in the season. I mean, he's just really good. And Dissly is that good, and he's just frustrated. You can see he blocks defensive backs. I saw him blocking Trey Boston, who's a safety for Arizona, and then he's blocking Chandler Jones, and then he's blocking Marcus Golden. I mean, he can block anybody, and I think he's one of those guys that you could leave a tight end and block like a guy like Clowney. I mean, that's a pretty tall order. Normally, you don't want that. But you look at some of these tight ends that are in the top 20 as far as receiving this year. And, you know, Kelsey, I'm not sure what kind of a blocker he is. Zach Ertz, I don't think that's his strength, but he's a really good pass catcher.
He was their leading pass catcher.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have any receivers with over 500 yards in Philly. So Kittle ended up with 1,053 yards this year. I know he missed a few games. But last year, he set the record for NFL, I think it was 1,447 yardage for a tight end in a single season. So, and can Will do that? I don't know, but I know this. The same thing you looked at, Jim, last year, I remember in 2018 going, it was like week 6 or 7 before other receivers that were like second and third on the team were passing him because he had caught so much in the first 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, I know one of the offseason things that Schneider's going to be looking at is upgrading that third receiver position behind Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. But, boy, you bring in Dissly and you start thinking about that offense with Will Dissly for a full season, especially if you get Carson and Penny back. If you get some improvement along the offensive line, I think there's going to be some shakeup there. But you start thinking about that offense, and it was good all year for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And you add Dissly into that, not only what he can do in the running game for you, but being the pass catcher that he's become. I was just looking, you know, last year against Cincinnati, he had one catch. And then he had 5 catches against Pittsburgh. He had 6 against New Orleans and 7 against Arizona, and then his last full game, 4 against the Rams. So you add that kind of production at tight end. Now, they're going to have to come up with some backup tight ends, too. I mean, Hollister, yeah. They'll have Hollister. But everything I'm reading and hearing anyway, it sounds like Luke Wilson is probably on his way out, as much as we like him, that mm-hmm. they might not bring him back. So they need to shore up that tight end position a little bit. But, of course, everybody knows that Disley will go a long ways toward doing that if he can come back healthy.
I wonder if it creeps into – I know it will creep into fans' minds, but even for him that, man, he hasn't made it past week 6 yet.
It's a concern.
Yeah.
Right? These are two serious injuries, and you say – It's incredibly bad luck, or is this guy going to be injury prone, or are these things going to impact him? Is he not going to be able to plant and cut the way he otherwise could, or accelerate the way he otherwise could? I mean, you're messing with his wheels here. You're messing with what makes him really good and special. His ability to block is all about his legs and everything. So, yeah, I think it's fair to be concerned. You're rooting for the guy. He looks like he could be an all-world type player, but are injuries going to be just his story?
Yeah, that's do you look at him and think of Procise? I don't really think of Will Disley in the same way. I think
he's already been more productive than Procise.
He's been more productive, and I was just thinking that Arizona game, Dave, didn't he go back to the area where he was injured and during warm-ups or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
And kind of like want to go back there and not necessarily relive it, but –
Procise got sidelined with a lot of soft tissue injuries, the flu. He's got a tweak here. He's got a tweak there. Felt like he got injured with really, I'm not going to say anything's minor. These guys are tough. They're out there taking big hits. But, I mean, he's blown out an Achilles. He's blown out a patellar tendon. He's not like, oh, he's got a headache. He's not practicing. Or, oh, he's got a little tweaked hamstring. He's not. That seemed like that was following Procise around a lot more. These more minor situations, it felt like.
Yeah, I don't feel like Disley misses a game because of the flu.
No.
And I like what you're saying about him going back to that point and, you know, kind of getting past it, you know, where he was injured. That, you know, I think mentally that's the hardest part of coming back. I just, the big knee surgery that I had in college when I dislocated my knee, I was just not the same for, you know, probably all through spring ball and then maybe my first couple of 3 games my senior year. And then all of a sudden I, you know, just hit it and made a tackle in the backfield and like I didn't think about it the rest of the year. But there's always like a barrier that you have to get past. And
that's
I think psychologically is more important than physically.
Yeah, and we've talked to a bunch of guys, you know, whether it's in the huddle or what have you, that have gone through major injuries. And I love asking them just the mindset. And they all say the same thing to a man, that the physical is hard and the rehab is hard and it's tedious and it can stink. But the hardest part is trust, is the mental, trusting that I can plant and I can cut the way I used to, that it's not going to blow out again, that I can just play free and not think about it. Whereas they've talked about sort of compensating when they first come back. Maybe they're not, you know, accelerating
as
quickly.
Well, you probably worry you're not going to be as good as you used to be.
Or you're worried you're going to re-injure yourself. So I'm going to protect it a bit. I'm not going to plant as hard as I otherwise would. Or maybe I'm not going to, you know, do things you didn't even think about before because it was just natural. And now you're like, man, now all that pressure is going to be on that Achilles or on that knee, and let me safeguard it a bit. And that impacts maybe how quick you come out of a break or how quick you get to a spot on the field you otherwise would have. So, yeah, the mental part to me is fascinating to see how guys deal with that.
But it's just interesting to me, you know, the tight end position, as they say. You know, just I was looking at a guy who really stood out to me when we played them. It was Troy Aikman and Jay Novacek. Do you remember him?
Oh, I remember Jay Novacek, sure.
Yeah, I saw him in the elevator when we went down there and played in that playoff game a couple of years ago, 2018, and looks like he's full-on cowboy guy. Looked like he lived out on the plains, you know, with a cowboy hat and everything. But I just remember them running these little 5-yard outs, and I swear I had him covered, and he would catch the ball every time. And it wasn't like a big play, but, I mean, he just was able to use his body. Shannon Sharp was the same way. I always tell the story about how I could cover him, but I couldn't keep him from catching the ball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those guys, just the way they work in the middle of the field, it's just interesting to see those guys that just aren't that fast. And like I said, I feel like it was kind of a fad there for a while to not really have a tight end or a fullback on your – it's kind of old school football, but you're starting to see all of these tight ends pop up, and there's this year – there was, I mean, if you put, you know, put Disley in there, there's some really good, there's 4 or 5 really good ones. Kittle, Ertz, guy named Darren Waller down in Oakland. He had over 1,000 yards, and, of course, Travis Kelce.
All right, let's take 2.
Take 2. Josh Gordon had remained quiet since his suspension that took him off of the Seahawks this last season, but he is back on Twitter, and he seems to love the Pacific Northwest. He keeps tweeting about the beauty, asking fans for advice on where to go. Do you think there is a chance we see him back in a Seahawks uniform?
We've got to figure out what the league's punishment's going to be, right?
Yeah, it's where'd they leave it? Just indefinite?
I don't recall hearing a definite suspension. He's out for this long. I haven't heard. I don't know what that's going to be. I'm sure Pete would love to have him back, and by all accounts, he was great in that locker room. He loved being here. The coaches, the players loved him. He was not, and we talked about that before when he came to the team. He's never been a divisive figure the way an Antonio Brown has been, or a Terrell Owens, or any. You know, we go down a list of guys who are divisive and break up a locker room. By all accounts, he's never been that guy. He's his own worst enemy.
Yeah, he hurts himself.
Yeah, he's the one that suffers from his actions and his illness. So, yeah, I don't know what the league does. I have no idea. I wouldn't mind seeing him. I wouldn't count on him being here. He's obviously dealing with something that's pretty darn serious to trip and fall that many times and keep getting opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging he likes it here, though. I mean, you see that tweet, and then I'm just looking at his stats, and we can remember what he did last year. It seemed like every catch, the seven catches he had, all went for first downs.
Well, they were always third down.
He averaged 20 yards a catch.
That Carolina catch he made, I think, is the best catch I've ever seen.
Low one?
The one that went over his head, and he caught like the back half of the football.
Oh, yeah.
It was
amazing.
Spectacular.
Might have been the catch of the year, unless it was Lockett's doing the toe-tapping thing in there in the end zone.
Yeah, I just, you know, do you spend time and do you invest in him if you...
I don't think it's a big investment, though, right?
If you think he's... Well, I mean, you're going to take reps away from somebody else, and if you think this guy has continually stumbled on the drug test, you know, do you want to make him part of your team? And I felt like this was his kind of last chance, but maybe it's not. Maybe he gets another chance. I hope he does. He seems like a nice guy. His teammates seem to love him, but I just wonder if you put that investment into him. Like you said, it's not a huge risk, and he wasn't a bad guy or anything, but he might take reps away from somebody else. Do you get the feeling that he's going to stumble again? And I don't think it's anything nefarious. It's just that...
No, he's dealing with a sickness.
Right.
I mean, he's obviously not in total control of it. I think it's fair to worry about it. You're not making a huge financial investment. Right now, you know, the way the roster's constructed, I don't feel like he's taking away from anybody else. He's not going to take away from Metcalf or Lockett.
I was surprised to hear that he was in town. Honestly, I figured he'd go back to where he was from, but... I would take a flyer on it. You got an opening at third receiver. I mean, it's wide open there, and see if Josh Gordon could fit the bill next year. But we have to wait to see what the NFL says about possible how long the suspension is going to go.
Russell Wilson will be representing the NFC in the Pro Bowl quarterback skills competition that will air tomorrow.
I'm really looking forward to that. I love that. I would love to be part of that. Like I said, maybe they could move me up like 10 yards. But, you know, he's trying to hit those moving targets, and they're like paper so you can see the ball go through it. And, you know,
didn't they
certain
put chalk
points
on the end of the ball, hitting the targets?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that the thing?
The older one? Yeah, but now they have these moving things. I love that. I think it's fun to watch. And all that other stuff is so much more fun to watch than the game itself.
Yeah. They're not setting the bar high by top, you know,
I'm excited
to top
for Shaq.
The game.
Shaq, that's awesome.
Yeah,
for
good
him.
For him. Good for him. You going to watch, Jim?
Yeah, I'll probably watch a little bit of the Pro Bowl. I think it's cool that Russell's doing this, though. I mean, I was just sitting there thinking about the NBA where you get all these no-namer guys in the dunk contest. And
the stars don't want to participate. Yeah,
so I don't know what it's like in the skills competition for the NFL at the Pro Bowl, but I think Russell, he'll take it seriously, and he'll be trying to win that thing.
All right, there you go. Coming up, new Cougar head coach Nick Rolovich joined Danny and Gallant this morning, and Jim's been waiting all day to talk about it, so we'll play a little bit of that sound for you. Coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
You ever wanted to know what dread sounds like, Dave? You just heard it a moment ago from Jim.
What was that about?
What are you talking about? I just repeated DJ. He gave us the 30-second.
Well, we're talking about numbnuts here that wants us to talk about hockey, like Bob said. there's no players, there's no coach, there's no mascot. It's 2 years away or
and
whatever,
no
2021.
Name. But, hey, let's break it down.
Yeah.
When are they going to name that team anyway? Talk about just lengthening the thing out. Let's go. Let's go with the Kraken and get it over with.
But anyway, we're sitting there having this conversation, and then DJ says, 30 seconds, and then Jim just says, 30 seconds.
No, it was more like, 30 seconds. I can't wait to talk about what we're talking about.
Certainly
like, you guys suck as teammates.
It was certainly
you guys are the
not.
Worst teammates.
No, we're on
I it. Want Danny back.
You're fired.
Oh, wait, he sucked as a teammate, too.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh. The sprinkler's
boy.
On.
Yeah. He's just getting everybody.
You know Danny listens. He called us out yesterday.
Oh, I know.
I know. Can you imagine being back there in New York? And you're sitting there in Manhattan. You could go to Central Park. You could go to a show. You could do just about anything. I think I'll listen to Bob even more.
He could be in Central Park listening on the app.
That's him being a good teammate, Jim. You say he's a bad teammate. That's him being a good teammate.
Yeah. How do you download that app? Can you show me more?
Thank you, DJ.
Yes, I can.
No idea.
You just interject anytime you feel like
Meanwhile,
it,
okay? Speaking of Danny, he and his teammate, Paul Gallant, they interviewed the new Washington State head coach. You love him already.
I do love him.
Guy has not called one play, hasn't made one move. He said, I love that guy. Yeah. And he's making friends. He's out there showing up to bars, paying for everybody's tab. So that's a good way to really get in good with the Cougar crowd. But he was on. They talked about that moment and what inspired him to show up to the Magnolia Village Pub.
People told me Cougs would respond, and they sure did. And I knew that the Coug fans loved the Coug, but I didn't realize it was at the consistent high level that it's been at least for the first week I've had the job. And I've enjoyed meeting everybody. I like people. I like being spontaneous. And I don't know. Cougs responded, so it was fun.
Do you wish you were there, Jim?
Yeah, well, he did it twice while I was down in Las Vegas. I'm hoping that he'll make a stop on the east side somewhere over there, like the Joker Pub in Issaquah.
Maybe he'll come to the
Cougar
Mustard
Hangout.
Seed.
Or the Mustard Seed there in Newport Hills or Dino's or something like that.
Dino's would be great. You got a couple of cool coaches. Kyle Smith also. I was listening to the Cougar Coaches Show last night as I was furiously driving to Home Depot to pick up plumber's putty.
Your home project.
By the way, Bob, it failed.
Did it?
Miserably, yeah.
It might be worth it just to pay somebody.
Apparently, I'm not very good at installing sinks.
Get that grief off your table. You don't need that stress.
But anyway, Kyle Smith, really cool guy. This guy sounds like a really cool guy. And I don't know, with Rolovich, you might see, it seems like to me, a little bit of a rubber band effect because of people were tired of Leach. You think? I mean, I feel
like that was the majority. I mean, I know
I don't
was,
know. I'm not sure.
Jim was. Do you think
we were
in the minority?
I think it was in the minority still, but it was a growing minority of people getting tired of Leach. I felt.
And you just love this guy already because he's not Leach.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, if I'm being honest, I was just ready for a change. And I admit I was excited when Leach went to Mississippi State because I thought, okay, let's see who's next. And I love the hire that Pat Chun made, our athletic director, and getting Nick Rolovich and going, you know, these different things where he's just reaching. I mean, it's not just reaching out to Cougar fans and going to Marco Polo and the Village Pub there in Magnolia. But he also he's going to local high schools. He was at the Eastside Catholic basketball game, I think it was a couple nights ago, and other coaches were there too. And then I see on his Twitter timeline he was over at Bellevue High School at the weight room just checking in. And that was one of the criticisms of Leach, maybe that he wasn't recruiting locally here in Seattle enough. And
did he go to the academic institute?
I don't know if he went to the academic institute or not. I'm not sure if that's still open and whether there's – I don't think they're cheating over there anymore. If they are, we don't know about it. But
sorry I brought that up.
No, that's one of my all-time favorite stories, although only eclipsed by what was going on with Brandon Roy and the whole Nathan Hale
you
thing.
You love that.
Yeah, that one was
You want to hear Rolovich's thoughts on the importance of recruiting in-state?
Yes, I do, Bob.
That'll be very important. I think you see a lot of people come into Washington, the Northwest, and get players. I look at some of the big sky schools and some of the players they're pulling out of Washington. I know we're a Pac-12 school now, but even some of the Mountain West schools really had success getting great players out of Washington.
How do you think Leach was as a recruiter?
I think he was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, he recruited across the country. And we had all – I mean, skill positions, the offensive line.
In-state, was he good?
No. In state, not so much. It bothered a lot of Cougs, you know, but that part, and I always, you know, go back to the Huskies always saying, you know, we want to put a fence around the state, you know, like we're going to get all the top recruits.
Why does that bother
you? That tone?
It just does.
The fence around the state thing. Jim's been harping on that.
I hate that fence around the state thing.
Tone. Yeah. Well, do you think it made it more difficult to recruit in state? I mean, because of the Huskies? I mean, that drawn a lot of the in-state guys away.
What, for you mean when Leach was recruiting?
Yeah.
No, because I still think that Washington State's a better place to go than Washington.
Well, I know you do. And I think the one thing about Washington State, I'll say this, my recruiting trip experience, which was a long time ago. When I went to Stanford, the one thing I felt was that there was kind of a community of the football players all kind of sticking together. And you know, that's just like the guys I played football with at Stanford are some of my best friends and some of the best guys I've ever met. And you get that same sort of sense of community at Pullman. It just seems like from talking to people, and I wouldn't know. I've been out there a couple of times, but it just seems like, you know, the whole Go Cougs thing and the flag at the ESPN show, the pregame show. And
there's
just
hardcore loyalty.
There's a lot of pride, a lot of loyalty. Yeah, and it just feels like that would be a good destination for a guy that wants to have like a kind of an old school experience at college, because you're not in the middle of a city, like a booming city or anything like that. And so everybody kind of hangs together, and it just, I feel like it's a pretty good recruiting, I don't want to say ploy, but I mean, asset that you have that, you know, that would bring a lot of good players in.
Here's
am I off on that, Jim?
No, you're not off on that at all. We love our school. I mean, every Coug that I know, and you know, even this morning I was at a Starbucks sitting there with a Cougar shirt, you know, a couple of people just walking by, and it's just go Cougs back. And yeah, I just I was just thinking too about, and I haven't seen it yet, and I got to make sure I watch it tonight when Clay Thompson was honored on Saturday. Mm. and he just talked about he's forever a Coug and what it means to him, and I'm 62, but I still get goosebumps over that kind of crazy stuff, because
you're a sentimental guy.
I love that place so much, and I'll probably tear up when I see it. He went out and kissed the Cougar logo at midcourt.
Who, Clay did?
Clay did at his ceremony.
You're getting choked up now.
I am getting choked up, because I just, I love that place.
Here's one more from Rolovich talking just to his recruiting philosophy in general.
I think it's pretty obvious we should start at home, but if there's players that don't want to go to Pullman or don't fit in Pullman or that's not what they're looking for, they shouldn't go there. I'm not trying to trick anybody to go to Pullman and play for the Cougs. I want guys that want to go to Pullman and want to play for the Cougs and want to be, you know, represent and take this Apple Cup rivalry proudly.
And then one more just on his goals for the program.
Apple Cup is very important to the program and to the fans. And I think striving to get to the Rose Bowl. It's been over 100 years since he won a Rose Bowl. I mean, that's a long time. And I don't know. People can laugh at me all they want, but they laughed at me in Hawaii too when I said we could compete for the Mountain West Championship.
Yeah, and they won it this year.
So that gives you hope for the next Apple Cup.
And he's been briefed really well on the Apple Cup, because he knows the last coach. And, you know, the thing is, I wish Leach had not been so stubborn and changed the game plan and beaten the hell out of Jimmy Lake, and he'll never get that opportunity now. But I never criticized him for treating it like any other game, though, and I say that only because that's the way Pete Carroll did it.
Yeah.
And he had so much – well, not had. He still has so much success in primetime games. So that philosophy can work, but it didn't in the Apple Cup, and I can't wait to see how it might change. I mean, hopefully we'll win one of these suckers.
I'm going to say Coach Rolovich is going to get a victory or two at least under his belt in his first go round before he signs an extension. How about that?
Yeah, what, in the Apple Cup?
Yeah.
I think he will too.
Yeah. So what, he signed a 4-year deal?
4-year deal.
Yeah. I think I'll say two. He's going to get two in those 4 years.
So. Yeah, hopefully the first comes this year.
All right, coming up, the Pro Bowl and the NHL All-Star Game are this weekend. We're going to talk about which sport does the All-Star thing the best. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program, as he does every day at 4 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. So you've got a couple of all-star games, if you will. You've got the Pro Bowl coming up this weekend for the NFL. You've got the NHL all-star game happening this weekend. Now, the NHL All-Star Skills Competition is on Friday. Their game's on Saturday. Pro Bowl Skills Competition is tomorrow. We talked about Russell Wilson representing the NFL, and the game is Sunday. Which is it, to me, there's not a debate as to which game is the best. It's baseball.
Baseball
is played.
See, I wouldn't know about the NHL, though. I haven't seen an All-Star game.
I haven't really.
Maura could probably give us a better idea on that. The NHL All-Star game, I'll bet that's fun.
Yeah, they do. I love the skills competitions, actually. I like seeing the hardest shot competition.
What about the actual game?
It's a 3-on-3.
The All-Star game?
Well, that's what they did last year, I believe. They narrowed it down to kind of like they do in overtime, and that's what they're doing with the women that they're having do it this year, too, which I'm really excited for because they were really fun to watch in the Olympics. They put together 10 of the best women from the USA and Canadian team, and they're going to do a 3-on-3 elite matchup.
That was one of my favorite parts of the Olympics, the women's hockey team. Mm-hmm. That was so much fun to watch.
So wait, but the actual NHL All-Star game itself is 3-on-3?
I thought that's what they did last year.
I thought it was like a regular game.
I told you.
But no.
Yeah, I thought so too. Well, you know, it's an aggressive sport, and I don't know the injury rate compared to like football, but you know, and I guess basketball is not really a high injury thing, but
They don't play. They elect not to play defense in that game.
Yeah,
generally, your scores are 153-149.
Well, and don't you think that's because nobody wants to jump and run into somebody or whatever? I think baseball.
Well, I think they don't want to make the effort. They jump. They'll show off with their dunks.
You going to sprint down, you know, court baseball is the one sport I think that you can play as close to full speed as possible without much more risk.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the reason why. And football is by far the most dangerous. I think it's the most injured sport by far, number of injuries.
Don't they say when you try to pull back in football is when you get hurt?
Yeah, see, that's why I wouldn't want to play. And some guys are playing. Whenever there was fights during in practice and during camp and stuff, it was always because one guy was going 100% and it was, hey, we're doing thud tempo here, which is 75%. You know, you're hitting, but you're not tackling to the ground. And then somebody, and I got in a fight over this one time and Chuck Knox yelled at me, but we had this running back that was trying to be a hero and he kept like running through us. And so finally I went up and blasted him and he's like, hey, we're not doing that. And I said, well, I used one of his terms on him. I said, he's got his hand in my back pocket, coach, because that's what he used to say. The opponent's got his hand in your back pocket. So, yeah, it always was something like that that ended up causing a fight. And I don't know if you remember the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago. Jimmy Graham got blasted by that. The guy was a linebacker from Buffalo, Alexander, I think. Anyway, he had been in the league for 10 years, and it was his first Pro Bowl. And he was fired up, and so he hit Jimmy Graham, and Jimmy Graham got mad at him. So that's the part where when you see that, you're like, come on, man. This is just – it's ridiculous. There's guys – you know, a guy like that fired up. He's going to go and go hard, and then you got Jimmy Graham who's out there to just make a catch and have his flag pulled.
Yeah, I forget how much they give these players for the winners and the losers in the Pro Bowl. I was just going to look it up here. But I think a solution for the Pro Bowl would be if they paid these guys more to play there. Because it's only, let's see, the winning side gets $61,000. Well, that was in 2016, but it's probably $65,000, $70,000, maybe $75,000, which to a lot of these guys, I guess, isn't that much money, especially if you consider the risk for injury.
Well, Bobby makes $1 million a game, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you jacked it up to, like, the winning players get $250,000 or $300,000 or something like that.
Yeah, maybe you'd see more of an effort. But even then, I think these guys make so much money, they value their time off more. And listen, where are they at this year? Is it Orlando?
Orlando.
Yeah, I mean,
it's raining down there.
That's fun. There's a destination. At least Hawaii was a destination.
Yeah. No, Orlando would be fun, though. If you got kids and you bring them down there.
Hawaii was always just such a cool thing to get to go to Hawaii. Yeah,
all those players have kids.
Orlando is,
there's bars in Orlando, though.
It's not that much of a trip to me.
Yeah, you want to make it unique or appealing to a guy who can go anywhere he wants, anytime he wants. At least Hawaii has got the charm of being tropical and
the Orlando beaches. Well, you know, what they need to do, I think, is continue to work on the skills competition. Remember the relay race? Did that interest any of you guys? They had these relay races.
I think they're doing that again this year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they did
dodge
it last
ball,
year.
They're going to do dodgeball.
They had dodgeball. Then there was another throwing and catching
precision passing
competition.
Best hands.
Guys had to go and make a sideline catch and then a jump over the top catch. And then, of course, the quarterback thing is fantastic where they're throwing at the targets. But, yeah, the game itself, I just – it's not long for television. But John says that the ratings are better than, like,
divisional
playoff games in baseball.
Yeah, because, A, those don't rate well. They're so regional. And, B, there's nothing else on. They're not really competing with anything. The NFL is still king. Anything NFL is going to be
more people appealing. Can not watch it.
Yeah, I think people tend to turn it on and they'll watch a part of it, go do something, the TV's on. I think that's
surprising,
kind of what happens. Somebody's saying, you guys are such downers and geezers. The NBA and NFL All-Star games are just for fun. It's fun to watch players joke with each other and have fun. Same with the NBA. Chill out about it.
Yeah, well, that's
The game stinks.
That's a decent point, though, because my kids, they love the NBA All-Star game. They don't care. Like, hey, guys, they're not playing defense. They don't care about that. They just want to see the ball off the glass and the guy coming in and jamming it and, you know, all the threes that are going up. So
yeah, I didn't like it when I was a kid, though. I don't know that many people that have ever liked it. I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's just it's sort of a default. Like, NFL is king. We all love the NFL, and we're familiar with all of these players. So yeah, I'll watch it for a quarter or whatever. And then invariably, you walk away and go, what are they doing? It's like they're dancing at the line of scrimmage. There's no tackling. There's no hitting. There's no pass rush. There's no blitz. There's no. It doesn't resemble the game you watch every Sunday in any way, shape, or form. That's why baseball has the best All-Star game. At least it resembles what you watch every single day. And we confirmed it is 3-on-3 in the NHL, which maybe it's entertaining, but it's not.
What if the NFL
went
to
the game they play?
What if they had four teams of seven? You went 7-on-7 and had semifinals and then had a final between the two winning teams? Does that mean
Dave weighing in on it?
Does that mean Dave does not like that idea at all?
Terrible.
Well, I was just trying to spice up the segment there, Dave.
I wonder how Dave felt about that idea.
7-on-7. I want more skills competition. Don't play the game at all. But apparently, I don't know. Well, apparently somebody, this guy's calling us downers and geezers. He's passionate about it. I don't know why he's so passionate about it. But
there's one.
Stop.
That's fine.
I'm not taking a dump on the Pro Bowl, Bob.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Hey, if you enjoy it, then knock yourself out. I'm not telling you not to watch it. We're just debating which is the best, and to me, it's baseball. It's the most like the real game. They're trying to win.
Yeah.
There's no risk.
There's no risk in playing hard.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to get hurt in one of these things. It would be the most useless thing ever.
All right, coming up, we're about to have a Manningless NFL for the first time in a very long time. We'll talk to the professor about that and everything else going on in the league. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.